Hi folks, it's your host Harmit, and you're listening to Tobin Talks. Hi everyone, thank you so much for tuning into Tobin Talks today. I'm your host, Harmit, and today is very exciting because it's our first episode of the 2023-2024 publishing year. We're back and ready to bring you all the news you need at the click of a play button. You can listen to our latest episodes on Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on umfm.com or on 101.5 FM radio. After the episode airs live, you can listen anytime on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast platform that you desire. Just search up Tobin Talks and you're good to go. Get ready, everyone, for an epic first episode back. First up, we'll recap the latest news, then we'll catch up with our Bisons athletes, and we'll end the episode off by interviewing Rusty Solimanov, director of the Village Lab here at U of M's Faculty of Social Work. The Village Lab is a community-based interdisciplinary health research lab, and they're conducting a really insightful study exploring the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on Indigenous people living with HIV/AIDS. But more about that later. For now, let's begin our news recap. For the 2023-2024 academic year, the U of M students will see an increase in tuition by 2.75%. The increase will also apply to all university fees. All undergraduate and graduate programs for both domestic and international students are affected by this increase, except for the undergraduate Doctor of Pharmacy program. UMSU President Tracy Carahogo and Graduate Students Association President Christopher Yent expressed concern for students who are already overwhelmed by the rising cost of living. Pick up a copy of the Manitoban to read about the statements provided by the U of M Vice Provost of Academic Planning and Programs and the Office of the Minister of Advanced Education and Training. Currently, students can self-identify as Indigenous simply by clicking a checkbox on Aurora. Thus, U of M is working towards an Indigenous identity policy to tackle the potential issue of identity fraud. In March, after consultations with Métis, Inuit, and First Nations leaders, U of M released a report and 9 recommendations for how a policy will be introduced. Visit themanitoban.com to learn about the U of M's next steps and to read what Indigenous student reps think about the report. The Faculty of Arts seeks to expand students' options by introducing micro-diplomas via the Department of German and Slavic Studies and the Department of Classics. The German micro-diploma can be taken as a travel course in Germany during May and June of summer 2024, focused on both language and culture. Fun fact, the students who enrolled in summer 2023 got a chance to meet with the president of the German-Canadian Congress. The micro-diploma via the Classics department is focused on mythology and folktale and starts in fall 2023. Students must take 12 credits of designated courses from the departments of Religion, Classics, Icelandic, and German and Slavic. At the June 8th UMSU board meeting, a motion was passed to strike an Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, or EDI, working group for the 2023-2024 academic year. The group's purpose is to bring EDI concerns to the university and make suggestions on how to address these issues. The voting body of this group will be made up of the UMSU community representatives. This will include the Indigenous, Women's, 2SLGBTQIA+, Black students, international students, accessibility, and racialized community reps. Along with these reps, 3 self-identifying students belonging to a marginalized community will also be selected to sit on this voting group. Fun fact, we actually had this voting group back in the 2020-2021 academic year. Grab a paper from stands all around campus to learn more about the specifics of this motion. In a one-year project funded by the U of M's Strategic Initiatives Support Fund, the director of the Center of Human Rights Research, an assistant professor in social work, and an assistant professor in labor studies all seek to address the accessibility of menstrual products across various of the U of M campuses by identifying barriers and advocating for equitable solutions. The project will consist of a comprehensive audit of the various bathrooms across campuses, a literature review on menstrual justice in Canada, and the organizing of a number of public and student-focused events to encourage participation and a holistic approach to tackling period poverty. Moving on to our sports summaries. In the world of U of M basketball, the Canada West, or CanWest, Conference announced in May that the U of M will host the Men's Basketball Championship in February 2024. For the Winnipeg basketball scene, Winnipeg has a brand new Canadian Elite Basketball League team called the Winnipeg Sea Bears. Simon Hildebrandt, who was the 2022-2023 Bisons and U Sports National Rookie of the Year, and Justice Allen, who was the 2017-2018 Manitoba Male Athlete of the Year, are two former Bisons and current Sea Bears to watch out for. Visit themanitoban.com to learn about how the Sea Bears are doing in their inaugural season. Now on to Bisons football. Four Bisons players were selected for the annual U Sports East-West Bowl, hosted this year at McMaster University on May 13th. The Bisons players were defensive backs Stefan Adamopoulos and Nick Conway, and receivers Baranu Yitna and A.K. Gusama. Fun fact, A.K. Gusama was also named 2022-2023 Bisons Male Athlete of the Year. Read the Manitoban to find out the results of this epic game. Up next, let's catch up on Bisons golf. The herd finished 10th overall at the Canadian University College Championship from May 30th to June 2nd. Held in Comica, Ontario, this is the first time the Bisons golf team has qualified for nationals since 2018. A very exciting feat, so great job, Bisons! Let's check out the updates for Bisons volleyball. Rhea Sorenx, our very own 2022-2023 Women's Volleyball Rookie of the Year, was named to the traveling roster of Volleyball Canada's Women's Indoor Next Gen team. As for men's volleyball, two of the players, along with their head coach and assistant coach, represented Canada at the North, Central America, and Caribbean Volleyball Confederation U21 Pan American Cup in June. Grab a copy of the paper to read more about them and their performance during the cup. Lastly, for Bisons sports, Gordon Burnett is the new coach for the men's hockey team. Originally from Regina, he has played for and coached for teams all around the National Collegiate Athletics Association, or NCAA for short. He was even head coach of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League's Winnipeg Blues, so he'll fit right in at U of M. Welcome to the herd, Gordon. That's it for the recap of Bison Sports. Now we have our research and tech editor, Ella, interviewing Rusty Suleymanov, director of the Village Lab here at U of M's Faculty of Social Work. The Village Lab is a community-based interdisciplinary health research lab, and they're conducting vital research, one of which is a study exploring the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic on Indigenous people living with HIV/AIDS. Let's learn more from the lab director himself. Take it away, Ella.
My name is Rusty Suleymanov, and my pronouns are he, him, and my position here at University of Manitoba is I am an associate professor in the Faculty of Social Work.
Okay, so I'm really looking to just do like a whole profile on the Village Lab, but I want to know about you, what got you started in your research.
Absolutely. So I work as an associate professor here in the Faculty of Social Work. Mm-hmm. But I am also the director of the Village Lab here at University of Manitoba, which is our community-based health research lab, where we work with a variety of vulnerable and marginalized populations. I myself, I'm trained in social work, in public health, in psychology, and I received my PhD at University of Toronto in social work. And broadly speaking, my program of study, my program of research focuses on the health, on the well-being of socially and economically marginalized communities, with a particular focus on community-based health research, and also with a particular focus on HIV/AIDS research and harm reduction research. So the social sciences of harm reduction, the social sciences of infectious disease. So that's kind of where I am situated. For the past 13 years, I've been embedded as in a research practice as a community-based HIV researcher, as a community-based harm reduction researcher in Canada. And my work also seeks to inform culturally safe models of healthcare, culturally sensitive models of healthcare, and other community services for a variety of communities are here. As a director of the lab, the Village Lab, we try to make different contributions to society with regards to social health care, public health policies, and of course, impact some of the key populations with HIV in Manitoba.
Okay, thank you. And when did the Village Lab start off?
The Village Lab actually started, it was formed in 2021.
And I know you guys have a lot of projects going. Could you tell me about those?
Absolutely. So drawing on a variety of community-based research principles, approaches, methodologies, our lab operates at this intersection of health and social sciences to address the health issues, social equity issues for marginalized communities. What we do is we work kind of under three domains. The first domain is facilitating community of practice. So the Village Lab facilitates development of collaborations, partnerships with, of course, community members, but also health system stakeholders, service providers, regional health authorities, policymakers, government officials. We had a federal minister of mental health and addictions come to university and visit us, Carolyn Bennett, and visit myself and the president. And we talked about the work that we do here. The second part is knowledge production, knowledge exchange. So here we are committed to generating new knowledge, new research on topics like HIV, on topics like sexually transmitted and bloodborne infections, infectious disease, harm reduction, addictions, community health and well-being, like social determinants of health, healthcare access. And the third thing, what we do is called capacity strengthening. So we bring students, we bring community together, and we train them. We build capacity, we increase capacity among community partners, peers. So by peers, I mean people who are living with HIV. Whether it's students who are living with HIV or community members who are living with HIV. So we really invest in them. We give them jobs, we give them research, full-time, part-time research jobs. And so we're committed to skills building and capacity strengthening among trainees, peers, and community members.
It seems very collaborative. Is it funded? Who is it? Is it funded by the U of M?
No, it's actually, there's multiple funders. Right now, most of our funding comes from the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, CIHR, which is our federal funder. But we also receive money from Winnipeg Foundation, Manitoba Medical Service Foundation, University of Manitoba. We get private funders, pharmaceutical funders like Gilead Sciences. So we have a lot of people who are finding our work. Mm-hmm. But just to let you know, I'm not the only person.
Yeah, I was just about to ask about the team.
Absolutely. Our team is pretty amazing. It includes the elder, indigenous elder that we work with, that really guides our work to make sure it's relevant to communities, that everything we do is culturally safe. Myself as a director, graduate and undergraduate, research assistants, coordinators, community members, and then all the work that we do, we try to also have guiding circles. Mm-hmm. So if we do different projects with diverse communities, we invite people from the community. So that usually can be people living with HIV, indigenous communities, First Nations, Inuit people, sexual and gender minority people, two-spirit people, Black African Caribbean communities, immigrants and refugees, people who use substances. So those are the individuals who form our guiding circles and then tell us how the research should proceed. So we always listen to the voices on the ground. We always listen to the voices from the community. And so really it's at that intersection that we created this community-based research lab and how we kind of pushing our work.
Because it's a community research lab, what does it mean for like participants in the research and how they choose to engage in the research?
Our values and core principles really are very social justice oriented. So, for example, our lab continues a path of truth and reconciliation. And so we make sure that all the principles of ownership, control, access, possession for indigenous communities are followed. If community members want to have access to the data and research that we collected, we always make sure it's available. All the research that we produce, we make sure it's not just academic publications, because nobody in the community cares about academic publications. We care about them in university environment. But what community members care about is community reports, infographics, some kind of nice workshops, training opportunities. So really opportunities that are more kind of in tune with the lived realities of, of communities. And so I'll give an example of some of the projects that we did in our lab. So we have multiple projects and we've accumulated over $1.3 million in research fundings for over the past 2 years of the lab started. Our first project, one of our first projects was called Migration and Health Study. And that's where we did research with refugees and migrants in Manitoba to better understand what barriers to access to care they face. So, of course, a lot of very familiar barriers like racism in healthcare has emerged. Access to care, insensitivity in the context of healthcare, and linguistic access. So that stuff was emerged from Migration and Health Study. Another project that we did was called Manitoba Two-Spirit, Gay, Bisexual, and Queer Men's Health Study. And that project looked at the healthcare access among this population of sexual and gender minority men who are a little bit more at risk for HIV, for example, we know in Canada. And so the particular study looked at access to HIV services. We did a similar study during COVID-19 among the same population, looking at how access has been disrupted by the pandemic. Then we have a study called Gigi Babaman Study, which is an indigenous Ojibwe term, which means we survive. It's a survival term. And this was a project among indigenous people living with HIV. And we tried to understand how the COVID-19 pandemic affected communities' well-being, specifically indigenous people living with HIV. And we looked actually at two provinces, Manitoba and Saskatchewan. Another project is called Ubuntu Pamoja Project, which is a project that's specifically where we work with Black, African, and Caribbean communities. And what we're trying to understand there is how to improve HIV testing for those communities, how to make HIV testing more accessible, safer, what places in Manitoba are actually culturally safe for community to go and access testing. And the final project is called HIV Doula Project. This is a project that focuses on Indigenous doulas. Mm-hmm. So doula is, I don't know if you know the term, it's a term that's a helper during birth work, does the birth work. So it helps in the context of birth, it assists new mothers. Mm-hmm. And so we're training those doulas not just to do reproductive health, but also sexual health. Mm-hmm. So we're training them in to engage more in HIV prevention, because at there's a lot of vertical transmission from parents to children in terms of HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. So that project looks at how do we train doulas to do better HIV prevention. So as you can see, a lot of different projects. Yeah. We're never stop working here.
Yeah.
Constantly kind of working on something. We also offer community programs. We started last year. We were funded by the federal government. Mm-hmm. We have this community program called Investigators. Mm-hmm. And so here we're training community on how to become researchers.
Okay.
So the members from the 2S LGBTQIA community. And we're like, well, come to academia, come to university. And those are people who are not necessarily connected to university in the mm-hmm. first place. And so we're bringing community to university. Mm-hmm. And we together do research. This particular year, we're focusing on mental health mm-hmm. and access to mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do. Research, training, mm-hmm. advocacy in the community. Mm-hmm. And that's how we kind of, the larger picture of our lab.
That is really amazing. Investigators program use a research method called the photo voice. Could you tell me a bit about that?
Absolutely. This is only one of the many arts methods that we use.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually only one of many, many different things. We also use performance and poetry. And yeah, so like photo voice, photography, drag performance. Our members of the investigators, very talented group of people. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why we use things like photo voice and other methods is because traditional research methods that we teach students in university are not accessible sometimes to community members. And so then we have this disconnect, like we are in this ivory tower in university where we learn about all these fancy methods and everything. And then we're just like, here, you kind of give it to community and then tell them what to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so here we use arts-based methods to make sure we don't lose on any voices from the community, to make sure research becomes accessible to communities. So we facilitate different research approaches using arts-based methods.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is really amazing. So what would you say is the next step for the Village Lab?
I think the next step over the next, we've done the strategic priority assessment with the lab. And so we look forward, of course, to continued energy and participation. And we always apply for new grants, new applications. We are here. We are situated on Indigenous lands, Treaty 1 territory. So we, of course, continue to work with Indigenous communities.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Ella, I don't know if you know, HIV epidemic in Canada is primarily among gay and bisexual men.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Manitoba, the representation is among heterosexual Indigenous women, more specifically. So that's who is mostly disproportionately affected by HIV on the prairies, Manitoba and Saskatchewan. This is where we have more Indigenous people affected by HIV. And so we want to make sure that communities have what they need to have to make sure to prevent this epidemic. And most of this HIV comes from colonialism, right? Like resources taken away from communities. So now communities are struggling to find resources to deal with the epidemic, right? Communities have all the wisdom, all the knowledge, We just need to make sure we work in collaboration and in partnership. Mm-hmm. Saskatchewan and Manitoba right now have the highest rates of HIV in the country. Wow. So that is why a village lab is necessary here. We are in the right place at the right time. We have the highest growing HIV epidemic, highest growing syphilis epidemic. Mm-hmm. So congenital syphilis among new children who are born in Canada. Many, many disparities that we still need to work on. So Village Lab continues to seek funding from community organizations to make sure we do implementation science and interventions and research and everything that's needed. So for our few next years, we are making sure that our impact is even bigger. We want to make sure that we're really not just produce research knowledge, mm-hmm. but also affect policy mm-hmm. at the ground level. Mm-hmm. And we really hope that the government's going to be more open to what we do. Unfortunately, our governments haven't done a good enough job, mm-hmm. especially at the provincial level, when it looks at funding services for people living with HIV, mm-hmm. when it comes to funding services, when it comes to addiction and substance use. So working in those areas, we have a very keen eye also for policies, because at the end of the day, why do we do this research? Mm-hmm. To affect the policies. Yeah. So we hope that our work becomes even more and more relevant mm-hmm. to the governments and to the stakeholders, to policymakers. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, that's where we want to go, to increase our social impact.
I think that covers all my questions. But is there any other thing you'd love to add or you would like people to know?
I just want to once again mention, like, if you go to our team lab, it's mm-hmm. not just me who is doing this work. Yeah. Like, I want to elevate the students at University of Manitoba, mm-hmm. bachelor students, master's level students, PhD, postdocs. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who are doing all this work, all the community peers, research associates. Mm-hmm. Because it's a community-based lab, it's the communities who are doing research mm-hmm. in their communities, right? Yeah. So that's the model. It's the peers doing work for peers. Mm-hmm. So if there's a take-home message, it's all about peers. It's all about community. And that's where the power lies with our lab.
Well, folks, that's everything for today's Tobin Talks episode. If you have any questions, concerns, or suggestions, please feel free to email me at audio@themanitoban.com. You can listen to Tobin Talks anytime on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it, and you can pick up a copy of The Manitoban from stands all throughout campus. Catch the next episode of Tobin Talks on July 27th at 11 a.m., Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you then.